Welcome to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. The Black Hills National Forest has a new leader. Mark Van Every is the new forest supervisor. SDPB's Charles Michael Ray sat down with him recently. He joins us now to add some background to the discussion. Mike, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Lori.
So tell me what a forest supervisor in the Black Hills does. What's his role?
So the forest supervisor is the head of the Forest Service. That's, of course, the federal agency that oversees most of the federal land in the Black Hills. So when it comes to issues like pine beetles or forest fire or habitat management or wildlife or timber or recreation like off-road vehicles, all of this is overseen by the forest supervisor, and his name is Mark Van Every. And he comes to the Black Hills with about 33 years of experience in the U.S. Forest Service. Prior to taking the job here in the Black Hills, he worked in places like Alaska and Wyoming and all across the nation.
You got a chance to spend some time with him. Why does he do this job? What's his motivation?
That's a great question, and I asked him that question myself, and it's probably best if I let him answer. So here's his response.
Well, you know, I think I do it for the same reason a lot of people like to be able to come to a national forest. It's because I get to live and work in the places that people have really fond memories of and that they have a lot of attachment to. And I get to have the privilege and the honor of being able to help manage that area along with the rest of the employees on the forest and being able to keep something for my children and my grandchildren and everybody else's children and grandchildren to be able to enjoy into the future and hopefully leave it in better shape than I started having the opportunity to be responsible for the management.
So one of the things I've been reading about is Spearfish Canyon and the possibility of turning part of it into a state park. Can you give me an overview of what that looks like and maybe what Van Every's thoughts are on it?
Sure, that's one of those things he's managing. And in a nutshell, state leaders, including South Dakota's congressional delegation and the South Dakota's governor's office, have backed a plan to turn a bunch of what was originally private land owned by the Homestake Mining Company in Spearfish Canyon from a private land into a state park. And this is some of the land around the old town of Savoy and includes some just really gorgeous country and arguably in the heart of Spearfish Canyon, places like Rough Luck Falls and Spearfish Falls. And part of this proposal is to transfer some federal land adjacent to this private land into this state park. Now, the argument here is that in favor of this is that this is a piece of land that is loved almost universally by everyone and that turning it into a park protects it for future generations, and it ensures that it can't be developed or mined for gold or disturbed. Again, this land is really seen by many as a treasure that folks say should be preserved.
Is it at risk for being mined for gold, or is it at risk for not being preserved at this point?
Well, I mean, there's an argument for and against that as well. There have been mining proposals on the rim of Spearfish Canyon that have come and gone in the past. Much of the area around this area is in the northern Black Hills near the Homestake Mine, so there's a whole bunch of gold up there. And, you know, anytime someone talks about mining in or near Spearfish Canyon, it raises the ire of many locals. But also, there's an economic development component there as well. And so there's always two sides to these stories.
So the Forest Service itself would oppose the transfer. Give me an idea of why.
Yeah, so the Forest Service itself doesn't necessarily oppose the creation of the park, I don't believe, but they oppose the idea of transferring federal land into this state park. And Forest Service officials in Washington, D.C. Came out against this in Congress as this bill was moving forward. And local officials, including Mark Van Every, have also come out against it. They say they're concerned about the idea of public access. They say federal land is free public access, and state land may not be. Now, the Forest Service officials are concerned also about the precedent this sets for transferring land out of federal control into state control. They say there's a normal process for how this goes and how these kind of land transfers can happen, and the bill being proposed by South Dakota's congressional delegation, including John Thune, changes this process, and they're worried about that. Forest Service officials also said they haven't been properly consulted on this, and they're not sure the public is on board. So folks like Mark Van Every say that there's no fee for use of a national forest, but they add that state parks like Custer State Park have entrance fees. They say this is a public access concern.
So I imagine if you live out there, you probably get an annual pass to Custer State Park. And this would put an additional burden on folks who live there and use that land all the time. Am I understanding that correct?
That's correct. And lots of folks do get the annual pass to Custer State Park, of course. It's a beautiful part of our state. Now, those backing the Spearfish Canyon State Park say they will not impose a fee for driving up Spearfish Canyon, which many people love to do. They say that won't be fee access. So they downplay the idea that there's going to be fee access to drive through the highway. But obviously, this is a story that's ongoing. We'll see where it goes.
I was just going to say, this sounds like we're going to hear a lot more about this in the future, right?
Yeah, the legislation is underway in Congress, and all the various players in this may have more of a say as it moves forward.
So this is hardly the only issue forest managers are dealing with. You were able to ask Van Avery about a whole host of topics when you sat down with him recently.
Yeah, you mean when it comes to the Black Hills, there's a lot of different complexity going on here, from pine beetles to forest fires to off-road management to long-term management of the forest overall. And, in the short interview I had with Mr. Van Avery, we just touched the tip of the iceberg on many of these things. However, I'd like to play a few excerpts from that interview. And one of the challenges the Forest Service is dealing with is longer and hotter forest fire seasons over the last few decades. And this means an increasing cost to fight forest fires over time. And I wanted to ask Mr. Van Avery about what this means for the Forest Service budget and how fires are paid for. And here's what he had to say.
Because the Forest Service does not have a special program specifically for fire like FEMA does for natural disasters, those costs, although Congress does fund us for firefighting effort, and the years where we have lots of fires, we frequently will exceed that available allocation that comes at the beginning of the year, and then we have to start looking at using other funds. And so the impact is it impacts our work in other resource areas. There's less money available for our recreation programs. There's less money available for wildlife or for timber management and other things. And so it forces us to focus more of our resources, more of our personnel on the firefighting effort. And as you probably know, there's proposals that are being considered in Congress to allow at least the largest fires, top 10%, I believe it is, of the largest fires, which are typically the most costly, to be funded through a special fund similar to what we do for things like tornadoes and hurricanes. And if that is approved by Congress, that would definitely help the situation.
Fires aren't the only challenge in the Black Hills. Did you talk to him about pine beetles?
Yeah, pine beetles are the 800-pound gorilla in the room or 800-pound pine beetle in the room. I don't know. But pine beetles, they really have changed a huge swath of the landscape in the Black Hills. And so, of course, I wanted to ask him about this, about his plan for managing what many call an epidemic, and hear some of his comments on that.
Well, you know, it's a natural phenomenon. It's something that occurs naturally. But as it begins to grow, when the population grows like it has here, because it's got lots of food to eat, lots of trees that are susceptible to the bark beetle, then we get the large impacts that we've had here. We're starting to see those impacts go down as the available food supply is reduced, as well as the beetle population is starting to decline as well. So I think and hopefully folks are seeing that there's a lot fewer red trees on the landscape than there were a few years ago, and we're hopeful that that's on the trajectory we'd like to see. So as that declines, then our next step is to look at how do we manage the forest going forward in the future with what we still have available, and how do we set up situations and a strategy that reduces the likelihood of a very large beetle infestation in the future, but also how do we provide wildlife habitat, how do we provide recreation settings for people, how do we reduce the fire danger? And all of those things work hand in hand and have worked hand in hand to create what we see in the landscape today. We have a lot more younger trees, and we'll have more as they continue to seed in those areas that have been opened up through the treatments. We have a lot of more mid-aged trees, kind of like me, that aren't quite as large as some of the ones that were more susceptible to beetle attack. And so how do we manage that, and how do we manage so we have a variety of ages and sizes across the landscape? So when something like this happens in the future, it doesn't have a large area to infest and create the impacts that it did.
And forest managers like Van Every talk about bringing more diversity to the landscape as a way to increase forest resiliency and to fight off things like pine beetles and forest fires. There's an idea that a forest that is not a monoculture of pine trees, but that is instead a mosaic, a mix of aspen and birch and other deciduous trees with some open meadows. They say that this is the most healthy type of forest that can resist, again, those bug attacks and those fires, and a forest that's better suited for any changes in the future.
Mike, how long have you lived in the Black Hills?
Oh, I grew up here. I spent most of my life here. I was gone for just a year, but this is my home.
How have you seen the forest change in your lifetime?
Oh, that's a great question. Growing up, you get to hike a lot of meadows and places in these hills that I've heard many lament, even folks in the South Dakota Game Fish and Parks, the meadows they used to hike through or hunt through that are now developed into housing developments. And you sure don't blame anybody for wanting to move into the beautiful Black Hills and want to live up here. At the same time, folks here also hope that their children, their grandchildren, can have the same outdoor opportunities that they had growing up. They can still get out and do these kind of things, hunting, fishing, hiking, recreating, driving a four-wheel drive vehicle into the Black Hills that they had when they were young.
What kind of mentality do you need then to sort of approach the news and decisions that are made, the arrival of people like Mark Van Every, who on the East River people might not see his arrival as a significant news story, but for you it was one of the first things that you said, we have to sit down and talk to this gentleman. How does it sort of impact everything that you read and do and think out there, just the forest, the nature of the forest there?
Well, we live in this state that's separated by East and West River, and a lot of people think of West River is different than East River, but at the same time, everyone in South Dakota almost universally loves the Black Hills. People cherish it. People either vacation here or they live here. This is a place that's close to many people's hearts, even if you live East River and don't get out here as often as you'd like, or maybe I'll only get out here for vacation. So what happens in the Black Hills matters for the rest of the state. There's also a great deal of livelihood and economic development, tourism, these sorts of things that come from the Black Hills. So who leads the Black Hills National Forest? This is an important part of the entire state.
You can listen to the full interview on our website of Charles Michael Ray talking to Mark Van Every. Go online, listen.sdpb.org. Mike, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Laurie.